Welcome to DevelopLex, a Middle Tech production hosted by me, Weston Lockhart, Ross Bogus, and Evan Knowles. This series will focus on the ins and outs of real estate development and investing, where we'll have the opportunity to sit down with developers of our cities, veterans of the industry, and key people that have over time made a massive impact on communities and neighborhoods. The purpose of this series is to be able to bring a knowledge base to our audience beyond that of what reading a book or watching a how-to video ever could, and educate from those who have done it by hearing their stories, both good and bad, along the way. We feel that historically the learnings of real estate have been inaccessible without being connected, and we would love to open the doors to the next generation of doers, as well as shine a light on how visions of community have been brought to life. We hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Bank of the Bluegrass. It's easy to preach about being a community bank without actually operating that way, but I can attest as a real customer of Bank of the Bluegrass that they are truly in the community and for the community. Whether it's closing a real estate transaction that needs some creativity, troubleshooting an issue where you need a real person on the other end of the phone, or just the simple fact that when you walk in the door, your banker knows your name, Bank of the Bluegrass has you covered. Plain and simple, the best bank in town. Bank of the Bluegrass, member FDIC. NMLS 421548, Equal Housing Lender. DevelopLex is sponsored by SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Steven at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project of windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say we build with integrity.
Welcome back to DevelopLex. Today you have Weston and Ross in the studio, and we are excited to be joined by Chad Walker. Pretty much everybody that's listening to this podcast has been in a building that Walker Properties has had their hand on, probably a mirror twin, and all the like around that neighborhood is the more notable things that at least I know from. But they do a lot of cool stuff in the city of Lexington, so we wanted to kind of get the journey of things like the warehouse block and how that got to be where it is today. And just some general real estate investing advice. So, Chad, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here, guys. Very excited.
So to jump in to who Chad Walker is, well, how do you describe yourself? Where are you from? What do you do? What excites you? What do you hate?
So I'm a Lexington boy all the way through. I was born on the south side of town over near South and Drive. When I was four, my parents moved out to near the Army Depot, and I've lived within 3 miles of that area my entire life. I live off of kind of the backside of the Army Depot now. And I'm all the way through Lexington. Now, I did go to high school in Bourbon County. So that's kind of my joke, is the only reason I ever left Lexington was for bourbon. But that's the only chink in my armor. I went to school for a year at Eastern, a year at UK. And then I guess I'm still current. I didn't actually graduate, but left there to join the family business. So yeah, I don't have the deep formal education like I should have. But that's where I was at.
Gotcha. And how would you describe yourself when someone asks you what you do today?
Oh, man, that's always – so if it's at a party or something and it's, what do you do? It's odd jobs here and there, whatever's required of me that day. I mow grass. I, clean up spaces, whatever. I do have my broker's license. I'm a commercial real estate agent. Also sit on Board of Adjustments and the Vacant Property Review Commission. But – yeah, mostly day to day, I just put out fires, whatever happens to come down. And we do mostly commercial redevelopment, taking old buildings and fixing them up new. But we have built a few buildings as well. So, and it's all centralized in Lexington. We've got a couple of things over in Winchester, but for the most part, it's Lexington.
Sweet. And how, we'll get into some, kind of the nitty gritty of what you guys do day to day at some point, but how'd you get started with what you're doing now?
My father's a commercial electrician by trade. He's done a bunch of big projects in town over the years. I wanted to follow in his footsteps, but I was a miserable electrician. I burnt my eyebrows off way too many times, and he said, we're going to have to find something else for you to do. So at the time, he owned a couple of commercial properties and needed somebody to sort of manage those. At the time, it was under the name RT Warehouse Company because as a commercial electrician, he didn't want some of his clients to think he was in competition with him, so he didn't go under as Walker Properties or anything like that. It was RT Warehouse. And so that was kind of the metamorphosis of Warehouse Block eventually, you know, years and years later. But he did that as a sort of he didn't want any of his developer clients to think that he was in direct competition with him.
Gotcha. And so obviously that has taken a journey from just a few properties, and now you guys have made an impact on literal neighborhoods. What is the scale of Walker Properties and what you're doing today?
So the majority of our stuff is in the National North Ashland Walton Avenue area, known as the Warehouse Block. We kind of branded that in 2015, I believe. We just didn't ever name it. It was such a slow process that we never said, well, here's what it is. It didn't have the Distillery District or No Lie or Gray Line Station brand behind it. It was just sort of that area at the time. It was sort of the on-the-way spot to Crispin's Cleaner. Everybody knew Crispin's Cleaner at the time. So that's since gone. But, yeah, that's just sort of the the slow process of the Warehouse Block transformation, I guess.
Yeah. And was that born out of any particular vision or did it just kind of
No, absolutely not. It was an accident. My father, being the commercial electrician, he had a building on North Ashland Avenue. And at the time, either properties on each side of him were just run-down piece of junk buildings. So he bought them and fixed them up. Well, then guess what? The properties on the either side of those were run-down piece of junk buildings. So he just kind of slowly morphed out. There was a family that owned the majority of it called it was J.T. Perry Lumber Company, and that whole group owned the majority of properties down there. There was a young, optimistic real estate agent in town. I don't know if anybody remembers him, but Ed Lane. Mr. Lane sold a lot of the properties to my father as the, I guess, the agent of the trust back when. And they horse traded for a bunch of years. And each time a property was sold, of course, when we fixed up the prior property, then the value went up. And of course, you know, that was always a little back and forth between Mr. Lane and my father. So that was always enjoyable to watch those two professionals. It's like
he was making the comps.
Yes. That's right. So, you know, and they were wonderful to watch, but yeah, learned a lot from both of them.
That's cool. And what's funny about that is you said it didn't really have an identity such as like No Eye, but when you're driving into town, there's literally like signs as you're driving down the road now that say Warehouse Block,
right? Yeah.
Which is funny. So there was no particular vision, but kind of give us a timeline of how things came together in what I think is one of the coolest parts of Lexington.
Thanks. Well, I think 87 was when my father first bought the property at 333 North Ashland, which is where the electric company was. And from there, he just, you know, sort of just piecemeal bought properties. And at the time, everything was a B4 zone, which is just a horrible zone. It's very restrictive. And so it was warehousing, you know, kind of a wholesale step. So we didn't have a lot of opportunity for restaurants, breweries, things like that. As time progressed, the adaptive reuse under Mayor Jim Gray came into effect, and we kind of got in on that criteria to help co-write it along with Barry McNeese, who's the Distillery District. The kind of the architect of that whole thing was a fellow named Jimmy Emmons, and Mr. Emmons sort of saw the vision of taking some of these old industrial sites, and we had already basically been doing a lot of these things. It was just a matter of sort of making it where it's not only legal, but, you know, kind of step to that next level where we could have breweries and you know, art galleries and things like that. So probably the pinnacle of it was in that 2014-15 range when we actually got the development plan to go through. That's when the New York Times caught wind of it and did an article on us. And that sort of hit a crescendo of, all right, well, they actually like what we're doing around here. It's kind of a nice thing. So Yeah.
And breweries becoming legal. I was actually just having this conversation while I was at West 6 like two nights ago. Breweries becoming legal in Kentucky was around what time? Was that,
I don't remember.
I know it kind of went as a domino effect of like the big three in Lexington kind of all happening. And now Mirror Twin is obviously a huge deal. What is the story behind Mirror Twin, which is now like a staple?
They were lost sheep just like us. We have winged it from day one. And so we walked Mirror Twin through the 725 national location, which at the time was occupied by a fellow who had an insurance company up front, and they had like a big woodworking mill in the back. And he was a collector. I can't say hoarder because he had things in boxes. So he was a collector, had a lot of collections. And so we're walking through the Grand Gang with Mirror Twin and trying to find aisles. And they were as nervous about doing what they were doing as we were, you know, taking them on. But I tried their beer. They had some homebrew stuff. Derek DeFranco is the head brewer and does amazing stuff. I mean, he's really a mad scientist. So we took a chance on them. They took a chance on us. And then they expanded over into the 723 spot, which is where Cosmic Charlie's was in for a while. And then we did a zone change to accommodate them being able to can in the neighborhood. Originally, the J.T. Perry or the Epping building was where Orange Crush and 7-Up was canned and bottled for Lexington. And so even though that was an old, you know, adage back in the 1900s, you couldn't bottle or can because of the zone. So even though it started that way, you know, the city, through their zoning laws, restricted it. So we had to do a zone change just to accommodate those guys. But Mirror Twin has absolutely exploded. They make some amazing product, and they're still good guys. They'll come out and shake your hands and, you know, say hi and stuff. They're very down-to-earth fellas, so we're glad to have them in the neighborhood.
What's cool, I think, about that neighborhood, though, and I'm kind of verbally processing this almost, when you think about a shopping center, everybody wants an anchor tenant, right? Yeah. Like if you buy a shopping center, you want Publix or you want Kroger to be the center. To me, Mirror Twin is kind of the center of that street.
Yeah.
And then it somewhat creates synergy around it.
It does.
What have you guys been?
I think if you ask a girl, there's a different anchor.
What's an anchor?
Blushery.
That's right. The blushery and the rose, the froses. The froses are dangerous.
With that being said, maybe the blushery is the anchor tenant. Have you guys been since you've kind of had these curated tenants and now you have to be cognizant of, you know, you own some of the buildings on the street and you're working with these tenants. Have you had to be cognizant of who you kind of lease to and how they fit in the neighborhood?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So we try to, I mean, you use the exact right word, which was curate. We really try to have a good variety of, like we may have two hair salons, but they're not going to be right next door to each other. With Mirror Twin, there have been, other breweries and things that have mentioned maybe doing a satellite over there. And we always go to them and say, what do you think? I mean, is this something that would be advantageous for the neighborhood or not? And we have taken a chance on some we haven't. So we try to have a good mix mash. And there's a component as well, and you kind of touched on this, is that since we do have the majority of the neighborhood, we can sort of control the parking. And that's always been a big issue with other developments in town, especially near the downtown, is you go to have a nice dinner and then you have this big, well, we're going to tow you and, kill your firstborn and all this. Yeah. And we don't do that. There's no tow signs in the entire neighborhood. We want people to go to like Rag Peddler and then go to Epping's for dinner and then maybe walk across the street to El Cid. It was selfless name dropping, but yeah, advertising for those boys. But yeah, you just try to have the community feel where once you get to the neighborhood, you can dump your car and wander around and still experience things without having to think, was my parking meter going to expire or is somebody going to tow me because I'm in a spot? That just does not happen. I'm the only person that tows in the entire neighborhood, and I think I've done it like three times in the last couple of years, and it's usually with a vehicle laser for, weeks at a time or something.
Yeah.
But we just don't do that. We want everybody to kind of enjoy, have a different experience than like campus or something where you're afraid to death that you're going to get towed every 5 minutes. So,
which is so neat too, because that neighborhood in particular, and this is going to be a selfless drop, me and my wife are very much so looking for a house in that neighborhood, in that North Ashland neighborhood right now. So any realtors, please reach out to me and just tell me what you got. But it's so cool because that development in particular is funded from Winchester Road. So obviously you have a very busy road that people can come from Hamburg downtown, but you also have people that can walk and bike from North Ashland. I don't know if you guys, again, thought through that on the front end.
Oh, yeah. You had to. And there was Mintel, Kenwick, and the Belcourt neighborhoods are huge funnels for us. And we, years ago, I think that was just the mentality, was us and them, because we were kind of in the middle of development and they didn't know what we were doing. You know, any standard developer, you know, just I think people are afraid that they're going to do a bad job. We've since formed an advisory board with the neighborhood, and we have them come in like two or three times a year to have conversations. We try to keep them up on everything that happens in the neighborhood. And there's a funny story. There's a guy, he's since passed away, but named Dick Cameron, who lived at the corner of North Ashland and Aurora. And he called me one day, and I'm very big about, you know, accessibility and, you know, crosswalks and things. And he said, look, you need to come up here. And he gave me his – he was in a wheelchair. He gave me his old scooter. He got on his new scooter and said, now let's go for a ride. And he took me to spots that were difficult for him. And, of course, we did like this biker club riding around. And he going, now how do I get up that spot right there? And wow. I go, you're right. And so we fixed it. And we've since done that with the Lexington Senior Center as well. There was a – he was a paraplegic. It was a board member came out and just rode around and said, here's your problem spots, fix these. And we did. And so we want it to be extremely accessible, you know, for everybody. And especially ADA is a big, you know, if you're going to be able to go from like Eppings to the popcorn place to, like I said, the Blushery, we want them to be able to, we want everybody to be able to access that without having to worry about getting back in your vehicle, even if it's, you know, accessibility issue. So, yeah.
Are you looking to start or scale your real estate portfolio in Central Kentucky? Check out Rapid Fire Investments. They find off-market, discounted real estate deals just for you, so you can save time and maximize profits. From single-family homes to multifamily apartments, no matter what your investment goals are, Rapid Fire can help you reach them. Sign up for their email list today and get notified when new properties become available. Just go to rapidfireinvestments.com. That's rapidfireinvestments.com.
That's so cool. I'm curious.
It was eye-opening. It was way eye-opening. I mean, I've never done that.
Because you just gave such a good story, I want to – you seem like a guy that can tell a good story. What's another good story from that block?
So I'll tell you –
people would like to hear.
I'll tell you a good and a bad. So I mentioned Cosmic Charlie earlier, and that was sort of when we really started reaching out to the neighborhood and saying we don't want this to happen again. They were great guys, but it was just – it was a noise issue. It was just too loud. And so, you know, we're trying to defend them back when and – you know, hey guys, you know, we need to get this together. And ABC was getting mad at him. And so we had a meeting on site. And I walk in and like I said, the ABC attorney's coming. You know, we've got the neighborhood representatives. And this is in our building and there's feathers everywhere. And the owner at the time, this guy's named John Tressaloni. It's like, John, what's up with these feathers, man? He's like, well, we had this band in here last night and they had this cannon that shot feathers into the crowd. I'm like, oh my God, like ABC's on their way. Like they're mad at us for being too loud. We got to get these feathers up. So he's sweeping up feathers, pushing them in the bathroom or whatever. So that was a quick fix thing. And ended up, it wasn't a good fit for the neighborhood. So they left. And I think it was better for everybody. But that was a that was a bad story. The good story, and I'll tell you the flip side, is this is what little I know about investing. There was a group that came in years ago and said, we want to rent a building. We want to rent like 3,000 square feet. It's like, okay, what are you going to do in there? It's like, what's this new concept? We like tie you to a chair and you try to escape and you can't really escape. And I'm going, that is the dumbest idea I've ever heard. Like, I'll rent you a building. That's fine. We'll put you in a spot, but that's never going to fly. And that company's Breakout Games. They have hundreds of employees nationwide and absolutely killing it. But, you know, I had no concept of what they were talking about. I'm like, yeah, if you guys want to do that, that's fine. Now they have prospective landlords call me. And they'll do the same thing that I did. Going, are these guys legit? Like they're talking about tying people up and stuff. Like, yes, they're wonderful.
Is that
they're
really
great.
What they're doing?
Like, what is this? And
it's not exactly.
so he put you as a reference. Can you tell us what's going on? I'm like, yes, they rent three spots from us. They're phenomenal. It's totally legit. Like,
and nobody ever comes out.
That's right. Yeah. Well, if you own a backhoe, you know it's all fit. Just make sure you own a backhoe. But no, that was a pro and a con to the stories of National Avenue and North Ashland.
That's cool. It's almost like two things I would say.
By the way, we love the Breakout Games guys.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Bryce is a really good friend of mine. Yeah, they're great. It's really neat because that neighborhood too is so retail centric. Did you guys experience a ton of difficulty around COVID, or was it somewhat resistant based off of the tenant mix that you had?
About 50-50. We had to engineer some assistance for the neighborhood, but everybody we've ever leased to, and this is from the, you know, mom and pop shop that's 1,000 square feet up to, you know, outside of this neighborhood, we've rented to General Electric and Libby Owens Ford and some of those big guys. But the same speech is given, which is, if you get in trouble, call us. We're small business as well. Everybody's got my cell number. I'm the point of contact from the time they make the initial call to the time that they leave. And we were able to work with some tenants that were having some difficulty during it. And yeah, I think we came out on the other side okay. But it was a little tricky. It was a little tough for everybody because I think the retail gang did do some online stuff, but some of them, like the gyms and things, which we've got quite a few, it almost killed them. But yeah, they've since rebounded, and I think they're better for it. We all are.
Yeah. If giving advice and trying to give actionable steps to real estate investors and how to curate a good tenancy, what would you say that you guys look for in prospective tenants as a landlord?
Most of the time it's local and a good idea. The folks that we attract probably don't have the money to be able to go into like Hamburg or the Summit or something like that. And so it's a lot more, people that have maybe leased in Chevy Chase before and are sliding over, or first time people. So we've never really had a specific, it's just sort of a, you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
And it also depends on the space. We've had people come in willing to pay, full price for basically a storage space, but it's a storefront, you know, well, that's probably not going to be the best, you know, look for the neighborhood. So, we don't have a specific set algorithm on that.
But it's a feel thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
So walk through what you mentioned Winchester, mm-hmm. and some of the work that you're doing there. Walk through what that looks like for Winchester's market.
So my wife Jill and I bought this little place called the Engine House Pub and Pizza Parlor. It's Winchester's oldest continually running restaurant. And with all my wisdom and financial acuity, I bought the thing in January 2020, which was the perfect time to own a restaurant and a beer place. We bought it as sort of a passion project because Jill worked there in high school and college and just really enjoyed the place ourselves. We went there a lot and just kind of wanted to keep it going. It's right up my alley because it's an old it was Winchester's original firehouse. It housed City Hall for a while. And so building-wise, it's too cool to pass up. We got to get it. But restaurant business is tough. And Winchester is really coming around as far as enticing people downtown. They've got grants for, like, first-time renters and things like that. I sat on a couple of boards for them. And of course, I tried to just sneak in town and have a place where I could go have a beer. And immediately it's, well, we saw what you did on National. Come do that on in Winchester. A little bit different. So for me, at least, it's been a different study because, like on National and Walton, you know, we own the majority of the properties, and you kind of can control your vision a little bit. Whereas Winchester, we only own this little tiny restaurant, but you're trying to still bring people around. Of like, okay, let's all have a common vision, let's all work together, and I think it's coming there. The city government is really starting to help a little bit, but it's just a small town. Small towns have a hard time keeping up with the big city, but as I tell them all the time, you've got a success story in Lexington. We can emulate some of those things without duplicating them and kind of make them our own and adopt it and, basically steal their playbook on some of these ideas. And, I think they're coming along. Yeah.
What have been some of the hurdles to being a restaurant operator for anybody wanting to get into the restaurant?
I have this idea, I'm just going to start. Anybody that goes into a restaurant and kind of armchairs like we all have, like, well, if this was my place, I would do this or that. If you want that experience, come over, give me a dollar, and you can have that perfect experience. It's not what everybody thinks. It's really hard. It's a hard grind. You don't get to just be maitre d'. Basically, I get called to do whatever awful job there is, whether it's, you know, dipping out the grease trap or fixing, a broken toilet, which I did back during COVID, or not during COVID, during the ice storm. So the cool part of it, though, is you get to meet a lot of people. And so it has its own little, political draw. It's like Winchester's living room. So we get to see all these people come in and, you know, come and go. You get to hear their stories and things like that. So that part's very enjoyable. There's probably easier ways to make a buck, but the people who are born to it are, I mean, like Cole down at Eppings, I mean, he's born to it. He doesn't get frazzled. It's like a 12,000 square foot building. I've never seen break a sweat. Meanwhile, our place is 1,000 feet, and I'm, you know, ready to murder everybody in the place on a daily basis. So it's different. I think you just have to have that draw. You have to be drawn to being a restaurateur.
Sure. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Well, you guys can come celebrity bartend and throw some pizza, man. It'd be great. We'd love to have you.
Oh, man. I've had my experience in the food industry. Yeah. I don't think I'll get back. I do love restaurants, though. I like eating.
So yeah.
That's a good thing. What I noticed a theme through all these things is you just seem like a relational guy for the most part on a lot of boards, like to do things that you just more so enjoy. What kind of advice would you give somebody that's trying to get into the position that you're in right now?
Just do the same thing I did. Get in their head first and start, you know, it's like when you read a book and you come to a word that you don't know, go look that word up, like figure out what that is. Learn all the time. And so when you come to a board and you go, I have no idea what this board does, where they're supposed to, go figure it out and ask somebody. And Lexington is great with their professionalism. They'll answer questions. Your council members are extremely accessible. I think that's just the key to it, is wade in there with both feet and figure it out. You guys did, I'm sure, you know, where you just, if you don't know it, and this is a ridiculous story aside, but I remember my father first said, yeah, you're awful electric, so let's let you do some property management stuff. And he sent me out to meet with this group, and it was, I think we were leasing a 12,000 square foot building at the time, and they're asking me these questions. Of course, they're all suit and tied up. And the one guy says, well, do you charge CAM fees? Well, I had no idea at the time what a CAM fee was. I didn't know at all. And I said, no. And I was met with applause and cheers. Yes. And like, no, CAM fees never. And then I went back afterwards like, oh, it's common area maintenance. Yes, of course we should charge for that. You know, my father's going, out of your mind? Like, why would you not charge CAM fees? But now I know. I had to go look that up. What is a CAM fee? What is a net fee? So don't just do like what I did and just skip over and go, no, absolutely not. We never charge that.
But that's a cool, I mean, but that's exactly what I think a lot of people are sometimes afraid to admit of. We have to make mistakes in order to learn it.
Well, I'm not smart by any stretch, but I can save people a lot of time and not doing the mistakes that I have made. And I think like when we deal with Winchester, that's usually what my probably biggest attribute is going, guys, this won't work. And trust me, because I tried it 15 times.
Yeah.
If you're lucky and do it the 16th time, but here's some things that'll save you time to not make these mistakes. So, yeah.
Yeah. You seem like you're good at procuring cool ideas. What are some things that you are, or well, I would say one pertaining to the warehouse block in particular. Is there anything exciting that you guys are kind of thinking through right now, or?
Yeah. So the building, so where Mirror Twin is now, between Mirror Twin and where CrossFit is, we've got slated for three new buildings we're going to put up. We started at like 43,000 square foot building. We've since shrunk that down to three smaller buildings. I think the largest is like 5,000 feet because we need the parking. That's kind of on the horizon. I really want to do a retrospective of these sort of signs that show what the buildings look like the before and after. We always see the before and after, but that's like our own little old Polaroid. So I want to blow those up and people can remember how, like, this building sat empty for 30 years and here's what it looked like. And
I can still picture that. Is it 701 that's the corner that used to be a liquor store?
Yeah.
I can still picture the blue that used to be.
There's a lot of echoes through the neighborhood when I walk around and go, oh, I remember exactly right there. I mean, there was, you know, a lot of those buildings I personally painted or I mowed or whatever it has to be. But, yeah, it would be neat to see, like you talk about what you want a house near North Ashland. It has built up as well. But to actually go back and see, and I think it scares some people to see that, yeah, this used to be a really rough neighborhood.
Yeah.
But the architecture is still there. But what it's, you know, ends up going away is like this, the debris and the trash and the bad usage of, you know, these empty properties. And to see the before and after, I think it'd be a neat thing to do. So I'm tinkering with that. Probably the next couple of years, I'll get that together.
That's cool. Do you see a potential in Lexington for another part of Lexington that could have exponential growth similar to what the warehouse block is right now? Or are you kind of keeping an eye on another part of Lexington? Or
yeah, So the missus and I own a property at the corner of 3rd and MLK that we bought from the FOP. Currently it houses a day center that services individuals suffering from homelessness. I think that that area is kind of on the rise itself. It's just difficult because then what do you do with that that group? And I, you know, they do a great service, and I think there's a lot of little pockets like that in Lexington that are just kind of, you know, filling in the teeth that's missing from the smile. And that's a spot I see. But yeah, as far as the rest of them, there's some great, great, like with the Gray Line Station and No Lie and, Distillery District. Like all those are just really cool spots that I'm always looking around to see other neighborhoods. But I think that I think a lot of them are being taken care of. You know, it's really like a nice thing.
All the really cool developers and owners of land or the landlords, do you guys just get together for like a monthly meeting and talk about how to make your all spots the coolest?
No, we still talk. I mean, there's quite a few of us that, I mean, as I said, I'm a huge fan of Phil Hollaback and Chad Needham and some of those guys. And it's, I think we're doing similar things, but they're different enough that it's like we have our own brand on it. But there are times when like Chad will call me and it's like a support group. Like we'll sit there and talk and go, let me tell you what's going on. And we just kind of curse each other on the phone and okay, see you next week. And it's a nice thing to have that, that support network for sure.
That's cool. I guess kind of an outward facing question. What are you most excited for with the future of Lexington and kind of where we're at in 2023?
Oh, man. I just like the way that Lexington's going, the way it's thinking is right now. I mean, they're doing so much more with walkability, bikeability. It's connecting the town. You know, downtown for years was just a place that was – you didn't go, you know, for anything. There was nothing going on, and it's starting to come back around. It's honestly – it's almost like I want to see it level off. And there's still a lot of growth. There's still a lot of things happening. But it's like all of a sudden this whoosh of great ideas and really forward thinking and ideas with like design and planning and things. And a lot of those are being realized now that I can't wait to see them like completed. They're right there. I mean, right at that edge of wrapping up. And, you know, Town Branch Commons, things like that. They were talking about a connector from Lexington, like Winchester, just like they did with the Legacy Trail from Georgetown to Lexington. And each one of those little projects is like, man, that's a slam dunk. Like, who thought of this? This is genius, you know?
We have free peanut smells in this town.
I mean, it's great. You know what I mean? Like, each little part of it is you go through and you got the peanut smells. You got the horses. Like, every direction you look is full. You know what I mean? Like, it's just nice. And, of course, I remember back in the old days, there wasn't a single local place that you could grab a bite to eat, and downtown was rough. And, you know, it's just nice to see that transition over my lifetime of, wow, this is actually responsible growth. The new guys like Needham and Hollaback actually give a damn. Like, they really want it to be better. And developers used to be these, you know, just scoundrels that were sitting atop a golden tower or whatever. And now they're actually guys that you can talk with and meet and go, well, I don't like this. And then they won't do it. Yeah. So it's, I think the accessibility on all sides of the fence is so much better. It's way less us and them. And it's great.
That's awesome.